Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, and welcome to the John Abercrombie Hour, where we will be dealing with various concepts, various situations, circumstances, and problems that are facing minority communities. And what we be talking about in some instances may not be shy. How? What kind of power? How does it originate? Policy? Who makes the policy? Policies? Politics? Who are the politicians? And what are they to us? We are looking at it from a minority, nonpartisan commentary. Nonpartisan. We are dealing with things as we see them. We are looking at things, for example, like the topic that we've been dealing with for the past couple of weeks, PTSD, non-military PTSD. It's a non-military, and we're trying to get people to understand that PTSD, it's come about as a result of trauma. Trauma is a trauma-related disorder. And it is one that is not treated. One wound up becoming, it's a mental health issue. And we have to be serious about this. There's lots of research being done on it, and the trauma, you know, it's amazing what can cause trauma. I mean, long-lasting trauma, not just, oh, it's going to be all right. Oh, all you need is Jesus. We just pray for you. You're going to be all right. No, it's a little bit more than that. Even Jesus himself would understand that it's more than. One need to sit with people and explain what kind of relief does Jesus bring? What does Jesus have to offer that you can lean on him? So many times, people don't take the time to sit with people and help them to understand what this Jesus they're talking about is all about. That some of us, we call him the Messiah, we call him Yahshua, the Hebrew name. Tonight, I thought maybe we will just deal with some specifics. And when I would look at what caused PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Let's just unpack that. Post-traumatic stress disorder. Post means what? Post means after. Post means that something occurs after something has happened in your life that was traumatic. Traumatic. It could have been something that I look at and I just said that was normal. That I don't know why that person is getting all bent out of shape because of that. Trauma. And when we look at it, I was traumatized as a child by the sound of the military doing maneuvers. around where I grew up. You could hear the house bombs go off, heavy, big time artillery, and the house would shake sometimes. It was awesome. And then you had the prayer troopers. And some of you, no doubt, have heard this before. But the prayer troopers would be coming along, and what happened? You hear the planes, and this be at night, in the morning when they did night maneuvers. That just sound like a bunch of bees that's coming over, swarming over. And sometimes I can imagine if you went outside, you would see them jumping out, the paratroopers jumping out of the plane. But that, now you say, how is that post-traumatic? How is that stress? How did that produce a disorder? I used to have nightmares of it. I was born in 1945. My parents lived in Maxville, North Carolina. That time you had the Lauderdale Maxville Air Base. And when they hit the planes taking off and landing, and then even whenever I went over with my grandparents, then you heard the foot soldiers doing their maneuvers. That was traumatic for a child. And stress. How did that manifest itself in my situation? Through nightmares, dreams. Wake up, cold sweat. I used to dream I was fighting a war. Dream that the Germans were invading my community. I mean, all of that just was a result of maneuvers. Just imagine what the children went through or going through that wind up in a real war zone. And that was mine. And then you look around and you see some of the impact that childhood sexual abuse had on people. And it's amazing. That scar stayed with them. Why? They lost something. What did they lose? They lost part of their identity. And that was one of the risk factors for PTSD. And it is, it could last if people don't get proper counseling. You want to call it treatment. And if you, there are other childhood trauma, I know people who were locked in the closet, and that was their punishment. But they didn't understand the impact, the long-term impact that they had on them. And then the bugs, they had bugs. They were afraid of bugs because evidently in that closet must have been some bugs or something in there that really frightened them. Post, that was when they were children. And they carry that scar. Post, this is non-military. Post, PTSD. This lead to disorder, mental health issues. Think about it. That part of their childhood that they lost. You've been raped as a child. If that doesn't go away, it is, let's just say, there are cases of non-military PTSD. And I'm sure if we look at it, look at the statistics, we see millions of people are impacted by PTSD that never went to a military in a war zone whatsoever. Let's just look at, I had a buddy in Vietnam. Now here, we were right out of high school, 17 and 18 year olds. We wind up, people wind up in the military. Some people saw the military as a means to climb out of the condition that they found themselves in. And then the war comes along, but they wound up. He was an IT person, a tech, and he was in the bunker with Westmoreland and all of them. And he saw something that he could not deal with. He never had a gun out there shooting at people. He was always in a protected environment. Maybe he probably been better off if he had been out there with a gun. But it's what Laz does. He just couldn't take the dead bodies that he saw that he had to walk past going to work. But to make a long story short, he wrote me and he explained to me. He didn't talk about what was going on, what he saw, where he was, what he was doing. But he told me he was drinking a fifth of booze a day. A fifth. To try to drown that trauma that he was experiencing. That disorder, stress disorder, for him, he wound up an alcoholic. He came home, and he's still drunk. And don't forget, we were visiting them. 3 o'clock in the morning, time to go to bed. We were up talking. He had to fill his glass up to go to bed. What does that say about? And this was many years after, even after he was out of the military, he brought that with him. Now, that was a military in Dukes. Now, whenever we look at others, do we see where our communities are experiencing loss? For some people, a divorce is a traumatic experience. Very traumatic. I remember when my aunt talked about her divorce. And the way she talked about it, that really tore her up. That was the worst thing that could have happened to her. And how she was stressed. She really needed counseling. But back then, there was no such thing as counseling for us. And then you went to the church, pastor tell you, though, oh, you just need to pray. Oh, well, you just need to lean on Jesus. He got the answers to this. And to me, that was, looking at it now, he was dismissing the people by telling them that, as opposed to sitting down with them and having a conversation. Death itself can be traumatic. Why? Said why? People should be glad to die so they can go to heaven. Because that's their goal, is to die and go to heaven. But what about the people that's left? There's a void there. There's a big hole. If you're not prepared to deal with that, you can fill that hole with many different things. And in so doing, some of them are really harmful to your existence. Let's look at support systems. I was fortunate when I was 16. Yeah, I can talk about me. Because I'm the one, I'm not going to get upset at me. If I do, I can just shoot me out. But at 16, I had an electrical accident. Playing with one hand. And my uncle was dead. I could have walked around and had a pity party. I could have walked around and felt that I was the cause of my uncle's death because I was trying to get a bird that's on TV antenna. And we hit the high tension line. I could have sat there and oiled up like some other people I've seen where they had to go through stuff and it was just too stressful. And they turned to the still spirits. And they just drunk themselves to death. When you don't have a support system, it's very traumatic for you to walk alone. You walk in this path all by yourself. And in so doing, it's really, I know in some cases, it makes the situation worse. In my case, I had a support system that I didn't even realize. I wanted to commit suicide. And if they told me I could go home, that was a traumatic day for me. Because here I'm thinking, right here I had two hands. I'm going out, I got one. And by this point, they got two hands, and I got one hand. What are they going to think about me? What are they going to say? Very traumatic. That's why I wanted to commit suicide. But there was two nurses. And these two nurses was members of the dominant group. They stopped me, and we had a conversation. I sit down now trying to remember what it was that they said to me. It caused me to turn around and change my mind and not go up there in the pool at Duke, on the campus of Duke Hospital, and drown myself. I didn't even know how deep the water was, but that's what my plan was. And then when I did go home, family was there. They did not see me as being different. My uncle, he said, come on, let's go for a drive. I don't know where we were going. At that time, we had pickup trucks, what we called three on the column. Those young people don't know what I'm talking about. They had a clutch, and the airship was on right there at the steering wheel. And my uncle gets in the truck on the passenger side. I looked at him like he had lost his mind. He only got one hand. I didn't have a prosthetic device, one hand. And he telling me to drive. And he sit up there. And he told me I'll take it out. And I didn't realize at the time how important that was. Support system. He was there to support me if I couldn't have done it. But he felt that I had to try at least. And I drove that truck up there. My little friends, they did not make an exception either. my buddies, yeah, I'm laughing. Because my buddies, they said, man, you dimmed the lights. That was about 10 miles from where I live. He said, man, you dimmed the lights. And that was a big joke. They made a big joke out of me. And they allowed me to participate in group activities. Oh, support groups. Yeah, 16-year-old. Really struggling with his identity as to who he is. Now with one hand. I know who I was before. I played trombone in the band and all of that. And what really helped me, de-stress me, when the trauma then moved into a disorder, was the way people responded to me. Well, responded to the situation. Yeah, me. That I felt I was different from them. But they didn't see it that way. So I became a healthy, productive citizen. Went on to college, had no intention of going to college. Was going to wind up going to the Marines, where I wanted to go, where I intended to go. And I remember, too, it just came to me. We had a pastor who had fingers was burnt off in his left hand. I think all of them. I'm not sure now. I saw how productive he was. He was a school teacher. And he played the piano. Again, I was around people who had a healthy understanding of who they were. And that in itself really gave me some hope, really helped me to see who I was and who I could become and what I became. That there was no limitation. And having worked in the minority community, I saw lots of people suffer from PTSD. Whenever you sit down now and you look at the crime rate, the guns, the shooting, killings, the homicides, those people who are left here, they're struggling. They're struggling with trying to understand things happen the way they did, the same as I did, they're struggling. And some of them, they do not have the support system that they could lean on. I have to stop at times and give thanks. Give thanks to the Creator for those persons that He placed in my life. That some of them didn't even say a word. But yet, they guided me through. Their presence guided me through my situation, circumstances, that I felt that what hindered me from being that which I wanted to be. I've seen young people who did not have a support system. A healthy support. I saw someone that had support system, but there was not a healthy support system. And I have to try to reach out to them and help them to process where they were and what they were doing. In the hope that they could turn themselves around. I want you to really, really think about it. And think about what's holding you back. What needs to hold me back was fear. Fear. Now you say, nah, fear gonna hold you back. Well, what happened was, every time I'd be on a break of something great, something I classify as being great, I would bark at it, I would stop. Why? Because I said, in my mind, I said, there got to be something bad going to happen. Something's going to block. This block my being able to do, be able to experience, I'll be able to share. I struggle with that. For example, every April the 25th, that's when I was, had the traumatic experience. April 25th, 1960. So every year around close to the April 25th, I'll get anxious. I mean, that was one of those triggers, just that date. And something would come up in me that caused me to be frightened about the situation, circumstances that I was going to have to face. My wife was dead. She didn't know, but she was there. She and her unknowingly, it was her presence and my other friend's presence. They helped me to get through time in my life, post-traumatic. I mean, this was years after post-traumatic. It was a traumatic incident that happened on that day and that month, years before. But what's happening, I wound up. reliving what took place that day. And that's what I mean about our communities and PTSD. Our communities suffering loss. Our communities grieving. I want you to think about it. You lost that great job you had when they downsized. You, your community, went to pot, not literally, but literally, there was an economic destruction came to your community. But you lost the ability to sit on your front porch because of drive-by. You were frightened of it. And prolonged a long-term, long-lasting death that produced PTSD. You're afraid to go outside. You lost. You lost your freedom. You lost the ability to watch the birds. You lost the ability to enjoy the sun and the wind because because post-traumatic, that's what we talk about. That's what post-traumatic is all about. It might not even been in your neighborhood when they were doing all them drive-by shootings. And the other thing that was happening, people were bumping you in the car. They would ride up behind you and bump your car. Some people were really afraid. Post, after the incident, people were frightened. They were traumatized. And you know, if they didn't get help, they developed a disorder, some disorder. They lost something. And we go back to the children. I had a friend in high school that had to come out of a situation when her perception of love was being abused. So what happened? Why, how did she get that way? What happened was you saw something long enough. You began to feel that if I join it, maybe that's the way I should, maybe that's the way it should be. If I join it, maybe it won't be so traumatic for me. If you saw your mama being beat, or your father being beat, felt helpless. And as you grew, that was what you were. We say the children do what they see. They're just doing what they saw. Power. I saw how men who felt powerless I saw how they took advantage of their wives and beat them up, beat on them just because they could. I couldn't relate to that. And they never go to church. And they sit up on the deacon's side. And the wires come in all bruised up. And don't say anything to the deacon. That's power. The guy's power from the church. It wasn't until some denomination came up with a policy against abusive behavior, especially with children, and even with women. The pastor was obligated to take action by referring them if it was child abuse or domestic violence. He didn't jump in and try to miss the police. He referred them by making a phone call. And that policy saved a lot of people, lots of children. Now, there was a negative side to that policy as well. I mean, that's a debate unto itself. So, what I'm hoping is that if you find yourself in any type of difficult situation or circumstances that you mentioned, that I mentioned, just seek some help. Because if you don't, the longer you wait, the worse that post-traumatic experience is going to get. That's if you don't have a support system. I hope that somebody hears something that challenges them to sit and think about their situation and circumstances that they find themselves in and begin to recognize that this is not normal. And that I have the power and authority to solve thousands. And even whenever you pray, you don't pray asking God to keep that person can keep doing what they're doing to you. You're asking the Creator Elohim to change his heart. His or her heart. And in so doing, action that is taken, he or she is taken, will change. And are you, if you lean on the word, Jesus thinks you're going to be tormented, that people torment him, not until the end. He shook the dampness off his silence against those people and walked away. But in the end, he had to fulfill the purpose, his purpose for coming, for being sent. He was sent by the Father. That's the story Maybe we will end it next week. Now we're going to ask the question. Now we're going to answer the question to the best of our ability. And hopefully I will have a guest or two next week. And we will talk about how Jesus handled the situation and circumstance, and what he would do if he was faced with some of these situations that we face with. What powers would he use? What would he come up with? You know, he spoke in parables. But those were solutions to situations and circumstances that he saw or that he was faced with. Politics? Politics plays a role in this too. We have to realize it. And what we do with the concept of reaction or proaction. So, tonight, my guest didn't appear. And we will bring this to a close. And this program has been created to honor John C. Abercrombie, who was one of the first bloggers, who was a board member of Global Coalition's Training Institute, the parent organization of Crown Talking Drums. And this should be the John C. Abercrombie Hour, Power Politics, Power Policy and Power Politics from a Minority Perspective. We will make that change. And if you, I will put the email address on the website. Well, the email address is on the website. We have a website. And I am the founder of this. But like I said, there was a board. And that board, that's where we met and shared ideals. And they bought into the vision that the Creator gave me. And we build this organization. And John C. Abercrombie was one of the faith of you. He accepted the vision and saw where he had a place in that vision. He jumped in, rolled his sleeve up, and began to think about how many ways we could put information out there that would empower the community. I'll be giving him a plaque on Sunday afternoon. I might try to see if I can share that with you on the radio on Sunday. And tonight, that is all we have, since there are no questions, no answers. If there's no question, there's no answers. There's no observation. we could not have a discussion. I want to thank you for listening. Those of you who are listening via the internet, I know you're out there. I don't take you for granted, because without you, there would be no Crown Talking Drums. And it seemed like my voice was getting ready to leave me anyway. I had a reaction to medicine, and it is about to go away. It goes and comes now. So I say shalom. May all the peace come to you and yours from the Creator. Until next week, shalom.